let me ask you how you got involved with being a reporter.
Okay, how I got involved? Probably bad luck. I mean, what happened was I was an investigator before I was an investigative reporter. In fact, I spent a lot of time in Seattle on my way up to Alaska to investigate the Exxon Valdez breakup. I did the racketeering investigation on behalf of the natives of Alaska. That oil spilled on their land. And I was finding all kinds of stuff. I just could not get into the newspapers. You know, how many people know that Exxon had shut off the radar on the Exxon Valdez 2 years before the accident, in fact, on its maiden voyage, and they didn't bother to fix it because it was too expensive to fix and operate. You know, so instead the story was you got a drunken skipper hits a reef, when in fact it was all about the corporation saving cash. British Petroleum was also involved. So why did I go into journalism? I couldn't get these stories written by journalists. And then I found out that the reason the journalists didn't write the story or broadcast them on TV is that they wouldn't let them. So, you know, basically, editors won't let you run stories, the real stuff about Exxon or any corporation. You certainly can't get it on television, which is a corporate-controlled media, especially operations like the public broadcast system, which has even more corporate control than NBC. So I just said, man, you know, from a kayak in the Prince William Sound, no one can hear you scream. I better go write this stuff myself. And then to get it on air, I had to, I ended up exiled to England. And that's where I am now, where I am, well, when I say now, I've just moved back to the United States this week. But the only way I can get my stuff broadcast is by that pirate radio outfit, BBC Television, and the Guardian newspapers, which is probably the most prestigious paper on this planet. But nevertheless, I can write in the Guardian, I can be on BBC, and you won't get it in the United States of America.
Talk about some of the stories that you are covering. The most current one, I believe, is the fiasco with the 911. The Bush administration apparently now admitting that they might have had some inkling that something was going to happen.
Yeah, well, don't you believe it? The story's worse than that. First of all, how do you do American journalism? In November, the World Trade Center was attacked September 11th. And by the way, I was very interested because my office was on the 52nd floor of World Trade 1. So I was very shaken up about this, about what happened. How could it have happened? BBC gave me the money, the time, and was willing to take the chance on getting to the bottom of it. And what we found is that George Bush, his administration, I don't know about Bush personally, but the top people in intelligence, that would be Condoleezza Rice and the rest of his intelligence organization, said to FBI agents, to the CIA, to the DIA, which is a Defense Intelligence Agency, you may not look at Saudi financing of terror networks. And believe me, the only way you can investigate is by looking at the terror networks. And I actually put on BBC television, they're talking about internal FBI documents, and now the American media is shocked that there are documents that were ignored. Well, I got to tell you, in November, BBC actually showed on the screen the FBI documents that show that the FBI was hoping to investigate the Bin Laden family, other than Osama, and that investigation was killed off until September 13th. So you had members of the Bin Laden family, not Osama, in the United States that the FBI had wanted to investigate and could not because these people were just too close to the Bush family. And in addition, we also learned, and now we're really paying dues for this internationally, is that one of the investigations killed off by the Bush administration when they came in was an investigation of the Saudi financing of the so-called Islamic bomb, which is Pakistan's atomic bomb. And right now we're facing a potential nuclear war between Pakistan and India. So the consequences of not looking between September 11th, possible nuclear conflict in Asia, are really serious stuff. And right now, the U.S. media, after first being completely somnambulant and hypnotized and not looking at what was obviously out there, has now fallen for what I call a second line of defense. The first line of defense is denial. Oh, God, how could we have known that we were going to be attacked by terrorists? That's nonsense. Now, that's coming through as baloney. The second line of defense is, oh, we have really goofed up. No, they didn't really goof up. There was no goof up here. I mean, there may have been some goof ups, But the problem was that this was a policy not to look at Saudi Arabian financing of terror networks, and that just about shuts down everything because Saudi Arabian money is behind most of the trouble. I mean, you got 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudis, and we bombed Afghanistan. We didn't bomb Jeddah.
Right, and it sounds like there's pretty significant ties between what the Saudis finance and what Pakistani intelligence carries out.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the big problems. In other words, Bush didn't say, don't go after terrorists. And by the way, I want to make one thing really clear. I have no information that George W. Bush knew in advance about September 11th, or any information, God forbid, that he had a role in planning it. I mean, that may be way beyond his capabilities. No such thing. I have no such information. Rather, I have the information that's kind of the opposite, which says this guy was operating blind because he blinded our intelligence agencies. Now, the question always arises, well, why in the world would he do that? And the answer is political and financial. It always comes down to the money, doesn't it? By the way, you can get this in my book, which is The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. There's a bit on the BBC investigation of the Bin Laden family connections to the Bushes and to this killing off of the intelligence investigations. And when I say the Bin Laden family, not Osama, but he has 52 brothers and sisters and a much wider family worth about $12 billion, the Bin Laden family. They are invested in the Carlyle Corporation, or were invested in the Carlyle Corporation, which is America's biggest defense contractor. And Poppy Bush works for Carlyle Corporation even today. And his son, our current president, worked for a subsidiary, took fees from a subsidiary of Carlyle Corporation. There are many other connections. After Daddy Bush left the White House, he went to work for a corporation called Barrick Gold of Canada. And say, well, who are these guys? Who's Barrick Gold of Canada? And the answer is that Barrick Gold of Canada is owned by, or was started by, a guy named Adnan Khashoggi. Now, that's the guy, if you remember, who was the bagman, the Iran-Contra arms for hostages deal. He's a Saudi billionaire arms trader who gave guns to the Ayatollah Khomeini in return for hostages. This is the guy that armed the Axis of Evil, and our president went to work for him right out of the White House. And here's something else just to add to the mix. Just before Bush left the White House, Senior Bush left the White House, he pardoned Adnan Khashoggi of his crimes. The man was under indictment under felony charges in New York. So Bush pardons Khashoggi and then goes to work for his company. So there's also Saudi money and Gulf oil money behind the rise of George W. Bush as an oil man. As an oil man, he was a failure in terms of finding oil, but he was really good at finding Saudis, and when he struck their pockets, he really hit a gusher. So it's not so much that he took a packet of money and said, okay, hey, listen, give me some Saudi money and I'll let the Saudi Arabia attack us and slam Saudi citizens into the World Trade Center. None of that. What it is that he formed a kind of personal political relationship with these people, which made them a no-go area for the intelligence community. So we're just beginning to get the inklings of that now, but I'm sure that the U.S. press will go back to sleep. They've had their little fun saying, oh, there was a goof-up, and they're allowing the FBI chief to take the fall, which is nonsense.
When you see things like the current attention being paid to the FBI situation, is that an opening for you perhaps to get some of your info out where it wasn't being relayed before?
In a better world, yes. That ain't going to happen. Let's put it this way. I have this character on my show in London a couple weeks ago named Dan Rather. And he said in London on my television show in Britain is called BBC Newsnight. That's where I'm a reporter, an investigative reporter. And one of the other reporters got Dan on who said, look, you can't say you can't question anything that the White House is doing. And the little bit of questioning you can do, you have to be ultra, ultra cautious. Otherwise, you know, you're not a patriot. You can't really investigate. He said, we have not been doing journalism, the networks and the U.S. media. We have basically just been waving the flag and not asking any questions. And he said, and you can't. Now, this is Dan Rather. So when Dan Rather is shaking and nervous about trying to report the truth, Well, there's no chance that some news producer is going to say, you know what, Greg Palast has been writing about this since November and broadcasting this on BBC. Maybe we ought to get him on. I just don't see that happening. I mean, I'm going to try. You know, let's put it this way. Nightline, which is, by the way, my sister program. I'm Newsnight, they're Nightline. They can use my films for free. They have graciously not accepted anything. Maybe Moyers is a little more independent, could do something. But I don't expect to see anything on your tube. They're going to go for the old, oh, we goofed up stuff.
Can you talk a little bit more about the connection between Saudi Arabia and Pakistan with the bomb? Because it seems ironic that the bulk of Bush senior people that were tied to Iran-Contra are now working in D.C. again. In fact, some of them were being sent over to Pakistan to try and, you know, bring things under control.
Well, first of all, the U.S. has backed a military dictatorship in Pakistan. This goes back, and here's the sad news, it goes back to the Clinton administration. And in fact, you should take a look at my book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. I'm using the name again because I'm stuck, because I can't say it all. And you want the info, you're going to have to read it. There's a section called Power Pirates, and it's all about companies like Enron. Now, you think it's going to be all about California electricity deregulation. Well, certainly it is. But these guys started out in places like Pakistan. That's where they first did their nasty deeds. And the government of Pakistan, the elected government of Pakistan, refused to pay some power, U.S. power companies. And as a result, there was an accusation and evidence that there had been bribery of the Benazir Bhutto government in Pakistan by these American power companies and British power companies. So these are crappy contracts that were ripping off the nation fiercely. And so they refused to pay. I mean, the government and the Supreme Court of the nation said, well, you don't pay contracts which are created through bribery. That's an old international rule. Unfortunately, there's another international rule. If you don't pay off the donors of the Democratic and Republican politicians, you stand a chance of getting your plane shot down. So we ended up with Musharraf, who first seized all the power plants, guaranteed the payments to the U.S. power producers, so that the U.S. was very happy, and then from that point it was very easy to then declare himself the head of state. So in other words, our hands are really dirty in all this business with Musharraf, the U.S. When I say the U.S., I mean not the average American. I mean, we didn't get any payments from Pakistan. But the U.S. can't say anything to Pakistan at this point. And then the other is that we were tied up with the Saudis, and they were the ones who apparently, now I can't say this for sure because, and I want to be very cautious, but the point that the CIA and DIA officials were making to me is that they could not investigate the evidence of Saudi financing of the Pakistan atomic bomb. I mean, it makes sense because Pakistan could not afford it. They had to secretly buy equipment and plans from China. China gives you nothing for free. Where are they going to get the money? The obvious place is Saudi Arabia, but I don't want to confirm that, just say that the investigation was stopped by George W. Bush. So you end up with a situation started by Clinton and made far, far worse by George Bush, and now we're reaping the whirlwind.
Can you talk a bit about the presidential election in this country, the rigged Florida votes?
Ah, how dare you say that our vote was rigged? Just because it was fixed. Actually, it's very interesting. I got a letter, or I should say Harper's Magazine, for which I've been writing, got a ranting letter from some woman in Florida named Catherine Harris, who said, by the way, that my writing, that Greg Palast is twisted and maniacal, which may, by the way, be completely correct. I'll be in Seattle and you can judge for yourself. I don't care if she thinks I'm twisted and maniacal. I do care about the fact that she did not deny my main accusation against her, which I printed in Harper's and put in on BBC television, and again, you didn't read in your papers, which is that tens of thousands of black people were removed from the Florida voter rolls illegally in the months leading up to the election. Now, black people vote for Gore if they get a chance to vote. These people were not allowed to vote. That was the election. The U.S. Civil Rights Commission agreed that that's what happened. And now Catherine Harris has finally fessed up. She's saying it's not her fault. She blamed everyone, including, by the way, Governor Bush. She blamed everyone else, but she didn't deny it happened. So So whatever the reasons, and who's ever to blame, basically that election was fixed. And, in fact, if you come to my talk on the 26th, in fact, the first chapter of the book is all the evidence and all the brand new evidence, which I really publish nowhere else, on exactly how they did it, how they covered it up, Catherine Harris, Jeb Bush, and the Republican Party. It was slick, it was brilliant, it involved some brilliant original uses of computers.
And pretty much you were the only one that covered this.
You know, it's a shame. I mean, there was some pickup from, you know, alternative magazines like Nation, Mother Jones. I have to give credit to the Washington Post, which published my byline commentary, an article, in June of last year, so 1 year ago. Now, I broke the story in November. Al Gore was still in the race. The Washington Post would not pick it up, would not touch it, until the U.S. Civil Rights Commission said I was right, and then they ran a story in June. So, in other words, while it was news, I couldn't run it. Now, it didn't become more news 7 months later, or better news. They just would not touch that story. And when they did, it was so timid. And once again, you couldn't really say this was planned. You had to go along with the big screw-up theory. And it was not a screw-up, because the evidence I had from inside the government in Florida made it very, very clear that this was a well-executed plan to take thousands of votes. And the idea that, well, they didn't know that Florida was going to be close, that's baloney. First of all, these guys, given a chance to take away thousands of votes, take away thousands of black voters, they'll do it. There's lots of uses for that, like Jeb Bush's reelection.
Talk a bit about how you use evidence. A lot of your critics, which would pretty much be the power elite and those that like to march behind them, you know, say that you're a complete liar and you never have anything to back up your stories.
What their usual charge is, they never, it's Harvin say, don't back up my stories. Because first of all, they've got the uncomfortable problem that I report for BBC television, which has a higher standard of verity and a higher standard of evidence than anything you'll see on CBS News or anything you'll read in the New York Times. And I also write for The Guardian, which is, again, the establishment of Europe. So it's hard for them to, like, put me in a corner as some type of freak. But what they try to do is they say, one, I'm a conspiracy nut. You know, this is a line I've been hearing on television. I was on Politically Incorrect. Okay, well, the problem is that there are conspiracies. What I mean by that is that there are meetings of people who don't like you to know what they're up to. You know, if you're going to steal an election in Florida, you don't exactly invite the public in to have a chat about it. But what I use a lot of, as you'll see if you read the book, in fact, one thing about the book is that it has an awful lot of documents photocopied in the book so that you have a sense of what I'm looking at. Now, obviously, I can't use all of them because a single investigation, just the Florida investigation itself, is a file cabinet full of papers. But you can actually see the documentation I use. So I'm heavy on documentation, which is very rare in American journalism. Basically, American journalists have pretty much given up on looking at internal documents, either trying to get them, trying to figure them out, and trying to publish reports based on them. It's just not done. What you do now is you go to a press conference, you get opinions from people, and ironically, this kind of opinion-driven journalism, which is what we have now, which is the mind candy that they put on TV and radio and in the papers, and USA Today is expert at this. Yet the idea of actually going to original core documents is very, very unusual. I mean, for example, even the investigative team of Newsweek and the Washington Post, right, when they were looking at the Florida election theft story, they said, well, there wasn't anything to it. We looked at it. Yeah, black people lost their vote, but it was by accident. I said, did you look at the actual list? It's a computer disk. And did you look at the disk? And they hemmed and hawed, and I can tell you something. I know, because you can actually find out who gets the information, because this was actually a public record. And I went through the public records to see who asked for it. And the answer is, no one did. No one asked for these public records. And that's the problem with the complete junk reporting you get today in America. and they get away with it because it's not like you have any real choices.
Can you brush a bit upon Enron? Because when that first erupted, I know I had my hopes bolstered a little bit, thinking that maybe this is finally the thing that gets the American people moving towards taking back democracy.
No, they treat you, you know, in America, the media treats you like this. Like, you know, I have five-year-old kids, and they treat you like I treat my twins when they wake up and they've had a bad dream. They say, you say, everything is all right, go back to sleep. And that is really the real motto of the American media. Everything is all right, go back to sleep. And same with Enron. These guys have been calling Enron the great entrepreneurs. And even when Enron was in flames and collapsing, they were talking about, the New York Times was talking about the wonders of deregulation, just saying, well, it was done wrong and Enron was a rogue and unusual corporation. That's nonsense. First of all, these are the guys who've been telling you how wonderful Enron was and that they were shocked. Once again, they're shocked. I've been reporting about Enron for 6 years. Let me repeat that. 6 years. In fact, you'll find in my book, written long before Enron became a scandal in the U.S., 10 pages on Enron. These guys have been manipulating power markets, lying, cooking books, since they were born in 1986 when that corporation was formed. That corporation was an evil creature created in coordination with the Bush family, because it was a creature of the deregulation of electricity in Texas, in Brazil, in the United Kingdom, in Pakistan, and in Argentina, way before it hit California. And you could not get American newspapers to run these stories for love or money. And I got to tell you, Enron was a scandal in places like India and Argentina long before it ever hit the papers in the U.S. And again, they were asleep, but, you know, oh, what can I tell you? Yeah, so they basically said, don't worry about Enron. It's a rogue company, just them, even though it wasn't just them. It was every one of these power pirates. What can I tell you? Read a book. Or you know what you can do? If you're too damn cheap to read the book, go to my website, and at least you get a lot of the articles, not the latest stuff or some new stuff. And you can also, at my website, which is gregpalace.com, you can get the new material as I produce it, and you can even see those BBC television reports, which Nightline was too afraid to broadcast, because we did broadcast my reports on BBC, and you can get them on your screen, real video, just by going to my homepage and clicking on the left side of the homepage, BBC Reports. And you'll see what, I don't know, what I guess is so scary.
Yeah, you'll see actually well-produced television.
Well, you'll see informative television. I mean, look, I don't care if they say I'm wrong. In fact, on my program, after I ran my report, we had invited on guys from the Bush administration, Bush buddies, who got up and said, you know, this report is complete junk. It's nonsense. It's baloney. Okay, say it's nonsense and baloney, but don't black it out. And that's what we've had. We have had an electronic Berlin Wall in the United States blocking out any real reports which are damaging to the power elite, which is anything which challenges the general consensus. That's what happens.
So how do we get around that electronic Berlin Wall?
Well, you're listening to it now on this radio. Show up when I talk in Seattle. Go to the website. First of all, we have two sources that the media barons can't completely control. Source one is the Internet, which is why they're always telling you to watch out for the Internet, because you actually may learn something. Yeah, there's junk out there, but hey, look at the Seattle PI. You know, come on. These are the people that told you that Hugo Chavez resigned as president of Venezuela, complete, absolute, total fabrication, and they ran it as news. You know, to line a birdcage with that paper would be a real an insult to your parakeet after running that type of story. So, yeah, go to the Internet. Obviously, I say go to my site, but go to others. The second is read a book. I mean, certainly read mine, but there are lots of good books out there, and it's true, it's hard to get through some of the big, giant publishers. My book actually was a bestseller on the San Francisco and New York Times bestseller list, even though it's published by a teeny-weeny publisher, Pluto Press. Believe me, no mainstream press would have touched my stuff. Well, now they will, because after the success, financial success of my book and Michael Moore's, you know, they'll run after money. But there's always going to be some publisher out there for print where you have some choice and you can actually get information that's somewhat worthwhile.
We get a half-hour version of BBC News here on the PBS channel. Do you know, is your stuff carried on that?
Yes, it is. Usually is. Almost all my reports have been carried on the BBC World Service. So if you watch that, you'll catch a lot of my materials. One other luxury I have is that I don't produce a lot of reports because they take so much time, they cost a lot of money. I'm not under the deadline pressures of most journalists who have to, like, every day produce some crap. And you can't produce real journalism if you've got 6 hours to produce a report. You're certainly not going to find out, you know, what intelligence items are being quashed by the FBI at Bush's orders. That you're not going to be able to do on a six-hour investigation. And that's mostly what news is. It's guys who have a daily deadline. Even a weekly deadline is impossible to get out any real news if you want some heavy stories.
All right, but you are now in the States.
I am now in the States. I'll continue with BBC, unless, of course, NBC changes its mind. Instead of giving Brian Williams that empty hairdo, making him anchor, they're going to offer me the job, and they're going to say, you know, we feel so ashamed of ourselves having messed up all these big stories. So we're going to turn it over to Greg Palast. I'm standing by the phone, but so far I haven't gotten the call. So I'm going to stay, even though I'm here back in America, I'm going to continue to work for BBC and the Guardian papers. But I'll be doing more. I'll be hopefully, we'll see what happens. I mean, I do want to try to challenge the mainstream media. Okay, come on, I've ended up being correct so many times. Not because I'm a great, brilliant reporter, but that I've had a network, BBC, and a newspaper, the Guardian and Observer newspapers, that have let me run the stories, let me investigate, give me the money, the time, the space. You know, this is what I need in America, and I'll see if I can get it.
So you're going to be here in Seattle on the 22nd of this month.
Is it the 22nd? I think it's the 20th, actually. We'll take a look. No, 22nd. You're absolutely right. I'll be in Seattle on the 22nd. Will you be there?
Yes. You're going to be on my radio show at 7:30 in the morning then. You'll be at the Independent Media Center at 4 o'clock and then at Town Hall at 7:30 p.m. So,
wow. Okay.
Busy
sounds
day
like
for
I better
you.
Get a little sleep the night before, huh?
Actually, you won't be able to sleep the night before because you're going to be on To Face the Nation at 11 o'clock that night. So.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like, you know, the truth is getting out one way or the other. So keep up the great work, and I can't wait till I get to Seattle.
All right, and we're looking forward to you coming here. So, okay. Thanks for your time.
Thanks a lot.